Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hello. How are ya? Hello. Yikes. Well, hello. Welcome back to another episode, our 37th episode of SOS with Molly and Alyssa.
Wow.
And we're really excited about this one. We're going to be talking about women in business, women focusing on their career, taking it fucking seriously, and it's badass, and it's rebellious in its own right, because...
But it shouldn't be.
But it shouldn't be. And she's awesome. Her name is Mariana Ramos. She's a creative marketer. She's a writer for the LA Downtowner. She's a CEO of Happy Hour City. And she's a host of an amazing show called Can I Vent for a Minute on Instagram. You have to check that out at Can I Vent for a Minute on Instagram. Her Instagram is Visions, at Visions of Mariana, at Happy Hour City, and at LA Downtowner, because she's a writer for there as well. Can't wait for you guys to listen to this conversation and watch this conversation on YouTube. Don't forget, we're on YouTube, SOS with Molly and Alyssa. So without further ado, here's Maria.
All right. Welcome, Mariana. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to see your beautiful face again and that you're here to talk to us. Like, seriously, thank you so much again for spending time with us tonight.
No, this is honestly, this is long overdue. And I've definitely been following from the get-go. So like, well, I've never met Molly in person.
Which is weird.
I feel like we were like, right by each other.
We had to. Yeah, I know. We worked together and didn't know it.
Definitely, like, when I still have Alyssa's, like, on whenever she texted me, her little picture popped up and it's her and I in her Selena outfit and I'm like eating a rose. And because we took all these like glamour shots at the
bar.
It
was the 90s. And you were like denim jacket. Like, you were like denim. You did a denim look.
Ooh, I did the 90s lesbian crush. Yes. That's who I went. Because it was your 90s party.
So hot. All right. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty. And I want to know what your SOS moment is.
So I definitely had to pick back in 2017 when I kind of lost my job as a full-time freelance writer and had to very quickly think on my toes and ended up creating an entire social media advertising agency from it.
Yes. All right. Yes. Well, that's fucking amazing. And I can't wait to hear more about this, but I want to backtrack a little bit back in time. And I want to know kind of like how you envisioned your career for your future when you were younger. Like, was it writer right off the bat? Like, what were your first initial passions that you wanted to go after?
So super funny that you say envisioned, because right, like, my social media company is called Visions of Mariana.
Yeah.
So from a really early age, like, I've always been a creative. First and foremost, I'm a writer for sure. Poetry is like where I got my like feet in. And then I really liked nonfiction and that became a creative outlet. And then I really like wanted to paint all of a sudden. Mm. So in middle school, I was like, Mom, I'm going to be a makeup artist. And she was like, that doesn't pay, but I'm here for it. And so I ended up like, I would do all my friends' makeup for the dances. And then eventually like I would do my sister's and all her friends. And then I was like, nah, this isn't enough. Like, it's not enough. Like, I have too many other interest. Yeah. And so I started taking like a digital graphics class. I became really enamored with clay, making things with my hands. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have too many passions. I have too many things I like. And then I also started to like pick up languages and learning the art of linguistics and
psychology. God, you are a jack of all trades. You're a jacqueline of all trades.
Yeah. So in high school, I was getting like C's and everything because my attention span was like, and my mom did not believe in My mom didn't believe in Western medicine, you know, so I was just like off the walls. And
interesting.
Yeah. What I came to find out was because in high school I was on my newspaper. So I was like the center editor. And I decided that I found one thing where all the things that I loved were encompassed in. And that included a lot of psychology. Mm-hmm. So I was fascinated by the way that humans work. And and that's when I found advertising. And from like junior year, like, I knew what I wanted to do. 1,000%. Mm-hmm. I was not ever like confused or wanted to backtrack on my, you know, major and whatnot. Now, I didn't finish college.
Mm-hmm.
Different story, but I've always known what I wanted to do, and it took a while, mm-hmm. but I got here. But writing definitely, like, it was such early stages for me when I fell in love with writing. I never thought I could make like a living off of it. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, I'll always write, but like that never pays. And now I write for a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And my stuff is published, and I'm actually working on publishing a poetry book this year.
That's amazing.
Oh my God, that's great.
I'm so excited. Yeah, yeah. So while I am doing my advertising stuff, I'm also still writing. So yeah, I've kind of always known.
That's amazing. Well, did you have like role models when it came to maybe not even just writing, but like in different areas that you were interested, that you like, and in female ones too, because I feel like a lot of men like to dabble, but like women, you know, it's like, when do we get that kind of freedom?
My grandma on my dad's side she passed away in 2011, but she was a published author in Brazil, Porto Alegre, which is near Sao Paulo in the south. And she got to publish 2 novels before she passed away. And she always said that that's where I got my writing gene from. That's where I got my writing bone from. And I like to think so. So yeah, definitely I didn't look up to her writing style per se. We didn't have the same, first of all, it's a different language, different culture and altogether. Right. But if it's like something that could be passed down, that's the author in my family for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Wow. It was just funny because what you said earlier about, you know, men mostly taking a stab at it and women not really. I really want to write an autobiography of sorts. And like my first chapter is literally titled like All These Women and No Fathers. Because, like, a lot of the women in my family, we don't have dads. Like, my mom's dad passed away super early. So did mine. My sister's wasn't really in her life. You know, my cousin, same thing. Like, all the females in my life are kind of missing that father figure.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think I've had a lot of female heroes.
And that's models. Really interesting. What would you say, like, what was your first writing job and kind of, like, what it was like being paid to do what you love for the first time?
So, you know, it's funny because I moved to LA with a photography background. And then I actually I actually got my camera stolen when I moved here like the first week.
No.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, there goes that. But again, photography was just like writing. It was another one of those outlets. So I was like, well, not really tripping. But I got my first writing job the same way that a lot of people like in LA get their first photography gigs or their first acting gigs. Like, it's not really what I want to be doing, but I'm going to do it for the money. And so it was a friend of mine. I was working at 2 different cafes. I was a hostess at a restaurant in downtown LA. Not Bottega, a different one. And I was like trying to do the startup at night. And a friend of mine was like, why do you still have like service industry jobs? Like, why are you struggling? Like, you write, don't you? And I was like, yeah, when has that ever paid?
Yeah.
And he was like, actually, like, you could write for like blogs, you know, similar to BuzzFeed or whatever.
Right, right.
And he's like, that's not really an art. And I was like, you're right. Like, that's kind of cake. And he hooked me up with this company in Chicago. And so I was working for them for a while, and I was still working all my other jobs. Like, I would wake up at 4 in the morning. I would go to a cafe. I would open the cafe. I would serve really grumpy people their coffee.
Yeah.
I would get off at like 11, and then I would write until about 6. And then I would go to the restaurant and I would host from like 7 to 11.
I remember this routine. I remember you telling about this and being like, what the fuck?
I had to, because I got really lucky like with the apartment that I had downtown. Like, the rent was really cheap, and I didn't want to fuck it up. And this, my friend, like, got me this opportunity out of nowhere. And then eventually that job wanted so much out of me that I was mm-hmm. like, hey, you're going to have to, like, compensate for what I'm doing on the side. So, like, if you want me full time, you can have me. But, yeah. like, you don't have to pay me because I'm not doing yeah. more than four jobs. Mm-hmm. And they did. And wow. So I was writing content for one of those blogs that are, like, super pop culture based, like what's trending, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
but what's mm-hmm. trending could be from anything from like Khloe Kardashian's Photoshop on yeah, her necklace yeah. to like 21 reasons why your relationship would be saved if you had anal.
Right.
Trending.
I was literally like, it was like the prostitution of writing for yeah. a little bit. Like I was like, yeah. I'm not getting any smarter by writing this
in
stuff.
In fact, it might be the reverse.
Is there like a kind of like a taboo in the writing scene when it comes to like writing for things like BuzzFeed and that?
I mean, honestly, BuzzFeed is like, it's reputable in that sense. You know yeah. what I mean? But like, yeah. when you think about it, like, where does everyone else go on the internet? It's like Reddit. You know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
like a lot of those, it's not that it's taboo. It's that like, it's not really a writing gig.
Out.
Like, it's a list. It's a list.
Yeah, right.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. those are called listicles. They're literally called listicles. And they pay less than actual articles. But, like, whenever we would have things that would trend, like, there was this one video that went viral of a raccoon climbing a building.
Riveting.
You 500 words on what?
Wow.
On a raccoon and why it caused a sensation and like use a picture. And so I was really, and then also the titles were the ones that got me because it was like, oh, you have to make it enticing. Like make someone want to click on it. I was like, mm-hmm. check out what this raccoon did today. Like you won't believe what he's doing tomorrow.
With the clickbait. Yeah.
So it got kind of cheap, but it yeah. paid the bills.
Was that the full-time freelance job that you had?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All yeah. Right. They, right. yeah. And I, because eventually I became their only writer. So I'm like, I'm churning out like 10 articles a day.
Wow.
And eventually that job liked me so much that they had me flying in between LA and Chicago.
Wow.
And I was supposed to start this whole branch of writers and like, we're going to do affiliate programs, you know, mm. an affiliate program is like when you click on a blog because they've linked it to Amazon for a product that they want you to mm-hmm. buy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that yeah. blog gets a cut of that.
Yep.
So we were going to start doing all that stuff and I was going to be in charge of that. And then the whole company got, you know, like that unfunded.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was
like
really
out
terrified.
Of the blue.
Yeah, I was really terrified, but I had other options. I had other offers. People were like, well, can you come write for us? Can you come write over here? And that's when I was like, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
It's not what I want to be writing, but damn, I'm getting paid. Okay.
Yeah.
And we worked with like a lot of celebrities. Like I would ghostwrite for like Kris Jenner. I would ghostwrite for like Bow Wow, like.
Wow.
Not reputable essentially, but like I did a lot of writing for like Fabulous and Akon and then
but like doing what? Like writing
like their social
media?
Well,
okay, so like yeah.
That's like their tweets and
like,
stuff?
Like you know when you go to like an actor's Facebook page and they like maybe they repost an article about like
yeah.
a movie that they were in or whatever. Or yeah, like that's a ghostwriter. Or like there was this social media platform. There was a social media platform that I worked for. It was mm-hmm. called mm-hmm. And basically I don't even know if I can say this. I'm thinking about it, I'm like, what, that contract was like 5 years long. I don't even know if I can say this. Point is, a lot of celebrities have a lot of ghostwriters on a lot of different apps. Let's take mm-hmm. the part out. Let's just say there's apps out there that way.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
basically
for sure.
they pretend yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, yeah. obviously people who aren't in entertainment don't always know that, but like, and not everybody in entertainment does, but it all, at the same time, it's not surprising. Like, you know, I mean,
yeah.
rappers are having, obviously, ghostwriters write their own actual rap lyrics. So like, of course, not every big time celebrity is on their Twitter 24/7 saying what they're
or
saying.
Or blogging. Yeah. for blogging. Christ's sake. Like, yeah, right. Literally sitting there blogging. No, it's a joke. But yeah, eventually that got really cheap. And I was like, okay. And so I started, my startup was a happy hours blog. Yeah. And I started on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. And I got to know the neighborhood. I got to know the neighborhood really well. And so then I applied to write for local newspapers. I was like, hey, mm-hmm, if I can make money from writing, mm-hmm, like I can write for it. I can be published. Yeah. So I begged around and applied. And then a year later, the LA Downtowner hit me up and was like, we would love to have you on rotation. So I write for them about once to twice a month.
Dang.
I just got to write a piece about them, about Chef Joseph Centeno here in downtown LA from Orson Winston and Barama and Paco Marcotte. And then I got to cover the Donut Man opening in Grand Central. So I made the front and the back cover.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've gotten to meet so many people, so many chefs. I've interviewed like some of the best chefs in LA. And I really love writing now, which is crazy to think that like a year, like 2-3 years ago, I was writing about anal.
Still important.
Still, yeah. No one tells you these things.
We don't know.
Renowned chefs, anal. So
we've kind of gone into like.
Both involve eating, am I right?
If you're doing it right.
If you're doing it right.
I gotta go.
You're eating.
I was gonna say, we've kind of touched on your SOS moment. So what you said, you know, was losing your full-time job as a writer. Is that when that company went under? And then kind of like the depths of where you got to and how you pulled yourself out of that, because obviously interested. And it's really hard when you're in the moment.
Everything it was super feels hard. Impossible. Yeah, it was super difficult. So despite it being really cheap writing, you know, like I was like, I'm getting flown out to Chicago. Actually, that's when I quit Bottega Louie. Mm-hmm. And they were like, can you fly out to Chicago on Mother's Day? And I was like, I don't think I can Mother's Day. Like and pretty much Bottega was like, I was like, I gotta go, guys. I'm sorry. I love y'all. But I took the chance and I thought I was really making it big. And then, we got defunded. And I didn't have anything for like a month. I had no offers, no side gigs, nothing. And I was pretty much running through my savings. And I got the call on the 4th of July. And we were like riding bikes on Manhattan. And I was like, hold on, babe. It's my editor. Like, this is weird. What's up? And he was like, hey, we're done. And I was like, what? Like, you guys have me on a monthly retainer. Like, it's the 4th of July. What the fuck am I supposed to do for July?
Yeah.
And it just really, 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 really sucked. They're like, I'm sorry. Like, this is what's going on. Like, we just don't have the money. And I was like, okay. Oh,
God.
I got it. They're like, if you need a recommendation, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, okay. And I just tried to enjoy the 4th of July after that.
Yeah, but like what was going through your mind? Like what were your options? Like what was in front of you that was like positive? And then like what was going through like even the negative in your head? Because I know there's so many people out there that are furloughed from jobs that they really like. And it's like, what was your experience?
Which was weird, you know, because now you think about it in the pandemic and I'm like, oh my God, if I was going through that now, like, I don't know what I would do. Mm-hmm. But the positive thing was that like I suddenly had a portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm not going into this blind. I just got to hit up other people, see who's hiring, see what's going on, tell them what I can do, and like mm-hmm. hope for the best. Mm-hmm. Worst comes to worst, I'll go crawling back to Bottega Louie. Mm-hmm. I'll start being a hostess again. Not a problem. Mm-hmm. No, it's not beneath me at all.
Yeah. All right.
But at the same time, like my partner was like trying to like encourage me to like, don't do that. Like, keep applying. Keep going. Keep doing. Do something else. He's like, Mariana, you don't want to be in the service industry, then don't be in the service industry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right, but I want to help the service industry. Like, it gave so much to me. Like, I want to give back. And that's where, like, he was like, you have a startup. Like, do something with that. That was impossible. I was like, we're not going to make money for years. Yeah. Like with what I had in mind, we just started making money.
Yeah.
And this is in 2017. So I got really desperate and I actually ended up getting roped into a pyramid scheme. Like
they're everywhere, dude.
Dude.
What happened? Was it like
so okay, so I had a little side gig that I got working as a tour guide for downtown Los Angeles, a walking tour guide.
Wow.
But it was like, it was always a side thing. Like I made maybe $200 a month from it.
Yeah.
But it was 2 hours a day. I liked it. I learned a lot. I learned how to memorize scripts and like facts. And I have all this information now in my head. And I met an Argentinian model on one of my tours who was here as a staying on a visa, and we became tight, like friends.
Wow.
And he knew that I was looking for a job. And he was like, oh, you should meet like the people that are hosting me, because he's on a visa. Mm-hmm, he's right. Like, oh, they're these like Hollywood directors and script writers, and they're working with an HBO show and blah, blah, blah. I was like,
oh.
Yeah, down. And I met her. And this girl's like, yeah, you should come to, like, my networking night. I was like, yeah, network. I could network with the best of them.
Right.
It was like an airborne, like, protein powder fucking granola bar thing. So many women were there, and like my mom did Herbalife, right? As all good Latina moms.
Yeah.
Yeah. God bless them.
Yeah.
But I'm privy. And I was sitting, whenever like they call us into the living room, I was like, fuck. I was like, I paid a $28 Uber to get to a fucking pyramid scheme meeting.
Oh, so you knew right off the bat.
No, I did not know right off the bat. I networked, I came in, I ate, it was free food. And I was like, okay, cool, what's going on? And then they set us down in the living room. And they all, like, all of a sudden, all these cardboard things start going up. Nope. And I was like, and then like, she's gonna share with us her story. And I was just like,
oh, about God. How she made $1 million in 6 months because she brought in her friends and she brought in her friends.
Oh,
and
no.
I coached them and then and you're just giving back.
And when I hit this level, I got a Mercedes. And when I hit this level.
Right.
And I was like, I know what this is.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God. And so I stayed. I wasn't rude. I wasn't like.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, okay. And then like, are you going to come back? And I was like.
Depends how hungry I am.
Maybe. Yeah. But even then. And so I was like, okay, that's a new low for me. And, you know, of course, like my ex at the time was like, how'd it go? And I was like.
Bitch, I almost got sucked in.
Well, he's French. So he was like, he was being, I don't know what, if it was like not a thing in Europe or something, but.
Yeah, maybe it's an American, like an American tradition.
What's a pyramid scheme?
Yeah.
And I was like, well,
like, it's how our country was built.
Basically,
yeah,
you think you're
how the country's built.
Yeah, I was like, you think you're up here and you're getting rammed in the ass. That's it. Like, absolutely.
Oh
so,
my God. Wait,
yeah,
okay.
And that was when I was like, what am I going to do? What the fuck am I going to do?
So when did you were like, okay, I want social media marketing, creative marketing. This is what I'm doing full time. This is me.
So I've always, like, because whenever I got to LA, I moved here by myself, and I realized that I could not, I did school in Texas, but I couldn't continue school and work and support myself at the same time. It's just impossible.
Oh, yeah.
So without any help, it's just impossible. So I've always, like, been really good about being homeschooled. So I've had all the textbooks, and, like, I've taught myself a lot of things about advertising. What I realized about creative marketing and the digital marketing was that when I reached out to my previous editor, the guy who told me that our company was done, you know, he was working elsewhere already like that. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And I'm lost and I don't know what I'm good at. And he was like, you handled our Instagram like a boss for those 3 days that we needed you to. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, people are paying for that. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, all right, whatever. And I like spent 3 days. I stayed up for 3 days. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. Mm-hmm. I could do that for a restaurant. I could do that mm-hmm. for like anyone yeah. local, like a local business. I knew that I wanted to do something mm-hmm. where I could show face because right. I have this energy, like I'm presentable. I know that I am, and I'm just better in front of people than I am on the phone or like mm-hmm. an email. Yeah. Like an email, mm-hmm. I cannot show you. Right. And so my ex worked at a restaurant, and he mm-hmm. was like, you know, actually, like maybe you could do that for us. And I looked at their Instagram, and I was like, yeah, y'all need help. And so I pitched yep. myself to them, and they were my first client, and they took me in, and it worked, and it just kept working. And after wow. a year of learning, 1 year with one client,
yeah,
opened up my eyes to so much. And then when I was finally able to take on more, I would be walking my dog around the neighborhood, and I would go into places, and I would like look at their Instagram before, you know, and I'd be like, either I found you on Instagram or I can't mm-hmm. find you on Instagram. And I ended up getting Gizmos Cereal Bar, Mescalero Downtown LA.
Yeah.
And then wow. and an eyebrow studio called Brow Down here. And Gizmos was the first thing that I got to 10K. I got to meet Kevin wow. Durant and Action Bronson from it.
No. And Action oh Bronson. That's... I love
it. Yeah,
that.
Girl. Dude. We smoked.
Yes. Oh, well, you have to. Yes.
He's like, yeah. He's like always high.
Yeah.
And then with Mescalero, we are like one of the top like agave spirit yeah. authorities in downtown LA. And the eyebrow studio that I worked for, the founder now does Cardi B and Lizzo's eyebrows.
Dang. Yes.
So shout out Renee. Love him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just started working, and I got a mentor. Was also a local. Her name is Dania Michaela, and I love her. She works for Silicon Valley now.
Wow. How did that situation yeah. fall into place?
Mentor. I met her because I was a hostess at a steakhouse in downtown LA, and I was juggling a lot of jobs. She would go there all the time, and mm-hmm. we like became really good friends, and we started spending like 4th of July's and barbecues together. And when I became interested in social media, I was like, can I pick yeah. your brain for like 2 days? Right. And she was always there. She never charged me a cent for any kind of consultation. We worked together on a few endeavors, and I'm really happy to call her like a confidant. Yeah.
That's amazing. Wait, so yeah. explain. So what is like... Well, first, I want you to talk about Can I Vent for a Minute? Because that's another amazing thing that you do. But Happy Hour City
yeah,
is separate, right?
Yeah. So throughout the whole thing with like my jobs and my income,
yeah.
I still had this startup, which is Happy Hour City. So it was a blog where I was going around reviewing happy hours, because when I was a hostess as well, we would get all these influencers, and they're like, oh, yeah. I'm here to eat for free. And I was like, how do I do that?
Yeah. Right.
I was like, how do I do that, but better yeah. and different, and like not get the stink eye that we're about to give you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, and
an influencer.
Yeah, this was like early 2016, 2017, you know, so I was like, there's so many people like crowded in the brunch space, in the dinner space. And I was like, you know what? No one's paying attention to happy hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really stupid.
It's because, so smart though. I mean, that you're going into it, like you would think that it would have happened, that space is occupied.
What I was thinking about it was like, if I'm going to go into a restaurant based on a foodie influencer's opinion, I don't want to spend $100 and then maybe be like, not my meal to my preference. So I was like, why don't people like care more about happy hours in general? Yeah. Why don't restaurants care more? Like, that should be like your sample. That should be your hook, line, you know, sinker, yeah. like your bait. Like, have your happy hour be so good that I want to come back for dinner.
Yes.
So I was like, I'm going to find those. And I did it by myself for like a year. And this idea just kept developing in my head where I was like, places like Bottega Louie never needed a happy hour. They have 1,000, we have 1,000 people of service. Girl, Sunday brunch, God bless us.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, what do we do for people like that? You know, like restaurants that don't need a happy hour. So then I thought about this whole like, you know, like off the menu thing. Like, oh, if you have the app, you get a happy hour.
Like a sampler.
So that's what we've developed it into. And I talked to one of my best friends who is like a very successful businesswoman who I ironically met on like Tinder years ago. And I was like, listen, I have this idea, but I'm not a business major. Like, I'm just not, I can sell it. But I don't know how to run a business. And she was like, tell me what you want to do. And I told her, and she was like, you have something. She was like, let's go 5149 and like,
wow,
I'll help you. And I was like, yeah. And to this day, we are an event production and bar consulting company. And we recently got to launch Bruno Mars's latest rum, Selvare. Yeah.
Dude, okay, so do you like, is she an app developer, or how did you even go about the process of developing an app?
Well, it's not even an app yet. We are literally just a company. Like, this is all in the works. Like, COVID obviously put like a gigantic stop on it, because the bars are our clients and our family and like our people. And if we can't help them, then our business isn't worth it. So
did this just sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just not an app, but it's well on its way. And as soon as this is over, we're going to kind of kick that back into gear. But we are a full blown company, and we're actually hosting an event very soon in a month. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So does this how long until you started to, because I feel like there's a fine line between, you know, artists and creatives. Obviously, if you're pursuing that kind of career, you do have a level of faith and belief in yourself, right? So like, if you're willing to work at a restaurant to pursue a creative career, you have to believe in yourself on some level. However, like what I've discovered is like in branching out from restaurants and getting out of that into other creative areas, I want to ask you, like, how long did it take for you to kind of take your own self seriously and get away from imposter syndrome when you're kind of like, well, I don't really do this. I kind of have done it. I guess I've done it. Mm. Well, maybe I should start. Like, do you know what I mean? It's a little bit of it's a bridge that like between from being in the service industry where you're like, people view you as like their bitch to being like, no, I actually have these qualifications and can start my own. You know, like, do you still grapple with do you grapple with imposter syndrome at all?
You know what? I have. Do I currently? No. I don't call it imposter syndrome. I call it the false prophet. I don't want to be somebody that preaches shit that I can't back up. I don't like being the person that can't, you know, walk her talk. And I gained that confidence from learning a new language. And I think that really empowered me, because when I was, you know, in the service industry, like I would sit people and like maybe they would speak Spanish or Portuguese or French or Italian. And those are all like I speak a little bit of all of them. I'm fluent in English, Spanish, and French. But I would always surprise them. Like I would sit them at the table and be like, y que tengan un buen provecho. And they're like, oh, she knows what we're saying. And that was a really empowering thing for me, like learning and like educating yourself, arming yourself with knowledge kind of removed that syndrome for me. But you know what? More or less myself than the people you surround yourself with. So I brought Happy Hour City to my friend Alex. Like I said, we were friends. And I just I was like, you're really successful in what you've done in your life. I want to do the same. How do I do that? You know, and the same thing with social media marketing with Dania. Like I was like, you're really successful with what you've done in social media marketing. How do I do that? And I just, if you lead with good intentions, you will receive good intentions back. And so mm-hmm. It's a lot of talent. It's a little bit of luck and the right timing, right?
Yeah.
So, but additionally, you struggle with self-confidence. And my relationship was toxic. Like at home, I wasn't built up at all. I was actually really put down. Mm. And I had to be my own cheerleader in that sense.
Right.
So it was like, oh, I have to pull myself up. But the people around me were like, no, you're onto something. Like, you're not, this isn't a failure. Like, you're smart. Or like, you can do this. You can keep going. You can get another client. And eventually, like, I got to a point where I did. And, and now, you know, like I give seminars on marketing. I work as a marketing, I have a 9-to-5 now, and I'm a marketing director for 54 city blocks of downtown Los Angeles.
Amazing.
And I still have Happy Hour City, and I still write for a newspaper, and I got bored during quarantine, so I started this show. And
love it. Yeah, so cute. Let's give people a little glimpse of that too, because we're going to promote
it.
Obviously,
like, this is annoying.
No, this is like, honestly, this is how you know you're doing something that's good for you, because if your creativity is constantly fueled and you have the energy to do that, then I think that's honestly, it's a huge sign.
Yeah,
when your creativity is drained from something else you're doing, then you know like there's some imbalance somewhere.
And
but I want people to know. Let's talk about your show real briefly before we close it out, because I think it's incredible. I think it caters to everybody's tiny, tiny, tiny little attention spans in 2020. And I want, will you expand on that?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, during the beginning of the stay-at-home orders, I was really lucky. Like I said, I have a 9-to-5. My job is essential, so I didn't lose anything except like a couple of side gigs, like clients with social media consulting and stuff like that. The newspaper aspect of my career, it's not that it pays amazingly, but it does in connections and in networking and keeping my creative flow going with writing. When the newspaper stopped, I live alone now, and I was working from home, and then Happy Hour City, I couldn't go to bars, and I was oh shit.
What the fuck?
I was like, I'm really bored, and I'm lonely, and I need to talk.
Yeah.
Because you can tell, like, I can talk. So, I was like, really inspired by my visit to New York in 2018, Stephen Colbert and everything, and I was like, I'm really funny. Like, someone should be videotaping this. And then I got like the idea to do my own talk show. And then I was like, but I don't want it to be me. Like, it's not the Mariana hour. Like, I miss talking to people. I want to see what people are up to, what they're doing, you know, how are they getting creative? And like, I've met so many interesting people in my life. I would love to interview them and catch up with them. And also keep up with people. Like, I don't want to lose any friends because of this. So my first guest is actually my best friend. And she ended up moving like right above me during the pandemic, and so I wasn't lonely anymore, and I was just built up by my community, like, to keep going. And I got 10 episodes deep into season one, and then I was like, okay, things are picking back up. I need to take a break. Like, I want to continue doing the show I do, but like, I need to like concentrate on other things right now, because everything else that's going on is going really well.
But it's so cool that you have that and you have all these things. Like, how inspirational it is to see a young woman, like, you're still so young, you know what I mean? Like, you're not 18, but I'm like, you know, see a young woman in her 20s, like, accomplishing so much and doing so much. I feel like that is such an inspiration to women who don't feel like they can even start that one passion project, let alone like three or four, you know, like, or learn about things that are out of their comfort zone and be uncomfortable. And like, we talked about this on another episode about doing things scared. You know, I feel like you are such an example of doing things scared, of just being like, I'm going to fucking do it. I'm going to be a tour guide. I'm going to write for Fabulous. You know what I mean? Like, that's so cool. And that's honestly why, like, I wanted you here, and like, we wanted to talk to you about this, because you are an inspiration, like, for sure.
Oh, no, thanks, babe. Yeah, you know, what Amy Poehler on her autobiography says, the best people do things before they're ready.
That's what I said on the last episode. I quoted Amy Poehler for her.
I love that book. You have no idea that book.
Me too.
That book was such an inspiration to me.
It really was.
And then I also, like, I don't know if I'm super in the zodiac and astrology, you know, and like I'm an Aries sun and an Aries moon and an Aries Venus. And so I'm trouble.
You're a tough one.
But I'm a Virgo rising.
Me so too.
I'm super into order and perfectionism and things like that. And I think I also abide by, like, do shit until it doesn't work. Like, do it until it doesn't.
Absolutely.
That's it. And when it stops serving you, when it stops working for you, you know, reevaluate. Don't burn any bridges, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But come back to the drawing board, reevaluate. So, like, what I've done with the show is, like, okay, I'm wrapping up season one. Mm-hmm. Let me work on season two and behind the scenes, and I'll get back to y'all, like, by winter. Like, I'm not abandoning the show whatsoever. I really like it. And all the feedback I've gotten is absolutely positive. So,
yeah,
I definitely want to keep going. I just need to make sure all this other stuff happens first.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to, like, continue.
For people listening to it, it's like 60 seconds. You basically give somebody 60 seconds to vent what, like, to bring up the topic of the episode, right? And, like, vent about, they have 60 seconds, just them talking, where they can vent, and then you discuss it. And so I think that's just so people listening know what we're talking about, what show it is. I think it's an incredible thing because you reach a wide audience by broaching a wide array of subjects. And also, like you said, within the first 60 seconds, listeners know, like, do I care? Am I interested in listening to this or not? And if they're not, they're gone. But if so, it's like, it is interesting. And, like, to hear what really sets other people off too is, like one of your guests was mentioning how small talk is just, like, a waste of time for society. And, like, it doesn't make us any smarter. It doesn't get us any further in life to be like, how are you? Good. Nice weather. Yeah. And it's just like, you know what? Yeah. Like, you're right. It doesn't take that long to get to the real meat of things. And I like that concept of just 60 seconds.
Which is, like, a reason we started this too, like what me and Molly did, because it's just like connecting with people was so important to us.
No, and can I just say that was such an inspiration? Like, I remember, like, seeing pictures of, like, y'all's release party, and I was like, Lissa belongs on her podcast. Like, absolutely. Like, I could talk to her for hours. Like, I'm here for it. And I thought everything was done, like, so right from a marketing standpoint, honestly. Everything was done so well. Y'all are so on brand.
Well, Molly does marketing too, and I think that helps a lot. Like,
yeah.
And I
think that's a really important thing.
It, yeah, I mean, shit, like, we are, it's, if we can impart anything, it's kind of just like, learn as you go and be all in and don't be afraid of failing, because you're just going to be, you're going to continue to learn. And if I'm learning anything from a conversation with you right now, is that it's like, do not be afraid, because, like, we're all going to fail. It's fucking inevitable.
I mean, not trying is failing.
Yeah. Carry yourself with the confidence of a middle-aged white man.
Yes. Amen.
Said by Jane Fonda, my hero.
And on that note, Mariana, thank you so fucking much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys.
Wow. Very inspiring. Very uplifting.
I love her so much. Thank you again to Mariana for coming on and talking about all this stuff, because I just feel like, you know, I don't have enough conversations with women about this, about, like, feeling like you're in a rut, feeling like you're not. I mean, you do and you don't. You don't hear a lot about it. Of course, it happens all the time, but it's like, you know, I feel like there's a stereotype that only men can feel unfulfilled in their career, when obviously, like, hello, we exist too.
Well, and I also think we tend to dwell on, for women's stories, we tend to dwell on feeling unfulfilled versus finding fulfillment.
Exactly.
And men's stories tend to focus on finding that fulfillment and success. And then women's stories sometimes get stuck, like, stagnant in the area of the, like, unfulfilled and trying to figure it out, when it's like, man, so many women have broken through that barrier and do all the time. And I think telling those stories is powerful.
Yep. And yeah, again, like, I'm so happy that she talked about this because, you know, it takes courage to find the fulfillment, like you're saying, like,
yeah,
to not give up and maybe just want to settle down, get to have a family instead of, mm-hmm. Which is no shade, if that's mm-hmm. what you want to do. But there's so much strength in actually like persevering and finding that, no, you can still find what you love doing and get paid for it and make right. it make sense for your life. So,
right. Yeah. And our charity nonprofit for this episode is Girls Inc. The network of local Girls Inc. nonprofit organizations serves girls ages 6 to 18 at more than 1,500 sites in 350 cities across the United States and Canada. Their research-based programming is delivered by trained professionals who focus on the development of the whole girl, supporting, mentoring, and guiding girls in an affirming pro-girl environment. There, girls learn to value their whole selves, discover and develop their inherent strengths, and receive the support they need to navigate the challenges they face. Informed by girls and their families, they also advocate for legislation and policies to increase opportunities and rights for all girls. To learn more and donate, please visit girlsinc.org.
And please follow us at VSOS Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Follow us on and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts at. And rate us 5 stars. Leave a review. It helps us in the algorithm to reach more people. Yeah, we love you guys. And here's to turning meltdowns into magic.